Chapter 11. Granny Next. Young Thursday came that morning as I knew she would. She had just lost Landon, as I had lost my own husband all those years ago. She had youth and hope on her side, and although she did not yet know it, she had plenty of what we call the other stuff. She would, I hoped, use it wisely. At the time, not even her own father knew quite how important she was. More than Landon's life would depend on her. All life would depend on her, from the lowliest paramecium to the most complex life form that would ever exist. From papers discovered in ex-Spec Ops agent Next's effects. I took Pickwick to the park first thing in the morning. Perhaps it would be better to say that she took me. She was the one who knew the way. She played coyly with a few other dodos while I sat on a park bench. A crotchety old woman sat next to me and turned out to be Mrs. Scroggins, who lived directly below. She told me not to make so much noise in future, and then, without drawing breath, gave me a few extremely useful tips about smuggling pets in and out of the building. I picked up a copy of The Owl on the way home, and was just crossing the road back to my apartment when a patrol car drew up beside me, and the driver rolled down his window. It was Officer Spike, Stoker of Spec Ops 17. The Vampire and Werewolf Disposal Operation, or Suckers and Biters as they preferred to call themselves. I helped him out once on a vampire stakeout. Dealing with the undead is not a huge barrel of fun, but I liked Spike a great deal.
Hey, Thursday, word is you lip flanker.
Good news travels fast, doesn't it? But he got the last laugh. I'm suspended. He switched off the engine and thought about this for a moment.
If the shit hits the fan, I can offer you some freelance staking for cash at Suckers and Biters. The minimum entry requirements have been reduced to anyone mad enough to join me.
I sighed. Sorry, Spike, I can't. Not right now. I've got husband troubles.
You're married? When?
Exactly, I said, showing him my empty ring finger. Someone eradicated my husband. Spike hit the steering wheel with the flat of his hand.
Bastards! I'm sorry to hear that, but listen, it's not the end of the world. A few years back, my Uncle Bart was eradicated. Someone goofed and left some memories of him with my aunt. She lodged an appeal and had him reactualized a year later. Thing is, I never knew I had an uncle after he left, and never knew he had gone when he came back. I've only my aunt's word that it ever happened at all. Does any of this make any sense to you?
24 hours ago, it would have sounded insane. Right now, it seems...
Stop that, Pickwick.
As clear as day.
Hmm, murmured Spike. You'll get him back, don't worry. Listen, I wish they'd sideslip all this vampire and werewolf crap so I could go and work at some world, or something.
I leaned against his car. Spec Ops gossip a welcome distraction. Got a new partner yet? I asked him.
For this shit? You must be kidding. But there is some good news. Look at this.
He pulled a photo from his breast pocket. It was of himself standing next to a petite blonde girl who barely came up to his elbow.
Her name's Cindy, he murmured affectionately. A cracker. And smart, too.
I wish you both the best. How does she feel about all this vampire and werewolf stuff?
Oh, she's fine with all that. Or at least she will be when I tell her.
His face fell.
Oh, craps! How can I tell her that I thrust sharpened stakes through the undead and hunt down werewolves like some sort of dog catcher?
He stopped and sighed, then asked in a brighter tone.
You're a woman, aren't you?
Last time I looked.
Well, can't you figure out some sort of a, I don't know, strategy for me? I'd hate to lose this one as well.
How long do they last when you tell them?
Oh, they're usually peachy about it, said Spike, laughing. They hang about for, well, 5, 6, maybe more.
Weeks? I asked. Months?
Seconds, replied Spike mournfully. And those were the ones that really liked me.
He sighed deeply. I think you should tell her the truth. Girls don't like being lied to, unless it's about surprise holidays and rings and stuff like that.
I thought you'd say something like that, replied Spike, rubbing his chin thoughtfully. But the shock...
You don't have to tell her outright. You could always scatter a few copies of Van Helsing's Gazette around the house.
Oh, I get it, replied Spike, thinking hard. Sort of build her up to it, stakes and crucifixes in the garage.
And you could drop werewolves into the conversation every now and then.
It's a great plan, Thurs, replied Spike happily. Hang on.
The wireless had started to report an occurrence of unspeakable nastiness up near Banbury. He started the engine.
I've got to go. Think about my offer. Always some work if you need it.
And he was gone in a screech of tires. I smuggled Pickwick back to my apartment and read the paper. I was glad to see the discovery of Cardenio had not yet broken in the press, but I was distracted. I stared out of the window for a moment, trying to formulate some sort of plan to get Landon back. Get him to books? I didn't know where to even begin. On reflection, that wasn't quite right. It was time to go and visit the closest thing to the Delphic Oracle I would ever know. Granny next. Gran was playing ping-pong at the Spec Ops Twilight Homes when I found her. She was thrashing her opponent, who was at least 20 years her junior, but still about 80. Nervous nurses looked on, trying to stop her before she fell over and broke a bone or two. Granny next was old. Really old. Her pink skin looked more wrinkled than the most wrinkled prune I had ever seen, and her face and hands were livid with dark liver spots. She was dressed in her usual blue gingham dress and hailed me from the other side of the room as I walked in.
Ah, she said. Thursday. Fancy a game?
Don't you think you've played enough today?
Nonsense. Grab a paddle and we'll play to the first point.
I picked up a paddle as a ball careened past me.
Wasn't ready,
I protested as another ball came over the net. I swiped at it and missed.
Ready is as ready does, Thursday.
I'd have thought you knew more than most.
I grunted and returned the next ball, which was deftly deflected back to me. How are you, Gran?
Old,
she replied, behaving quite the opposite as she skipped nimbly sideways and whacked the ball towards me with savage backspin.
Old and tired. And I need looking after.
The Grim Reaper is lurking close by. I can almost smell him.
Gran.
She missed my shot and declared,
no ball,
before pausing for a moment.
Do you want to know a secret, young Thursday?
She asked, leaning on the table. Go on, then, I replied, taking the opportunity to retrieve some balls.
I am cursed to eternal life.
Perhaps it just seems like it, Gran.
Insolent pup,
she replied as she returned my serve.
I didn't attain 108 years on physical fortitude or a statistical quirk alone. Your point.
I served again and missed her return. She paused for a moment.
I got mixed up with some oddness in my youth, and the long and short of it is that I can't shuffle off this mortal coil until I have read the 10 most boring classics.
I looked into her bright eyes. She wasn't kidding.
How far have you got?
I replied, returning another ball that flew wide.
Well, that's the trouble, isn't it?
She replied, serving again.
I read what I think is the dullest book on God's own earth, finish the last page, go to sleep with a smile on my face, and wake up the following morning feeling better than ever.
Have you tried Edmund Spenser's Fairy Queen? I asked. 6 volumes of boring Spenserian stanza, the only saving grace of which is that he didn't write the 12 volumes he had planned.
Read them all, replied Gran. And his other poems too, just in case.
I put down my paddle. The balls kept plinking past me. You win, Gran. I need to talk to you. She reluctantly agreed and I helped her to her bedroom, a small chintzily decorated cell she darkly referred to as her departure lounge. It was sparsely furnished. There was a picture of me, Anton, Joffy, and my mother alongside a couple of empty frames. As soon as she was seated, I said, They sideslipped my husband, Gran.
When did they take him?
She asked, looking at me over her glasses in the way that grannies do. She never questioned what I said, and I explained everything to her as quickly as I could, except for the bit about the baby.
Said Granny next when I had finished. They took my husband too. I know how you feel.
Why did they do it?
The same reason they did it to you. Love is a wonderful thing, my dear, but it leaves you wide open for blackmail. Give way to tyranny and others will suffer just as badly as you, perhaps worse.
Are you saying I shouldn't try to get Landon back?
Not at all. Just think carefully before you help them. They don't care about you or Landon. All they want is jack shit. Is Anton still dead?
I'm afraid so.
What a shame.
I hope to see your brother before I popped myself.
Do you know what the worst bit about dying is?
Tell me, Gran.
You never get to see how it all turns out.
Did you get your husband back, Gran? Instead of answering, she unexpectedly placed her hand on my midriff and smiled that small and all-knowing smile that grandmothers seem to learn at granny school, along with crochet, January sales battle tactics, and wondering what you were doing upstairs.
June?
She asked. You never argue with Granny next, nor seek to know how she knows such things.
July, but Gran, I don't know if it's Landon's, or Miles Hawkes's, or whose.
You should call this Hawk fellow and ask him.
I can't do that.
Worry yourself woolly then, she retorted. Mind you, my money is on Landon as the father.
As you say, the memories avoided the sideslip.
So why not the baby?
Believe me, everything will turn out fine. Perhaps not in the way that you imagine, but fine nonetheless.
I wished I could share her optimism. She took her hand off my stomach and lay back on the bed, the energy expended during the ping-pong having taken its toll.
I need to find a way to get back into books without the prose portal, Gran.
She opened her eyes and looked at me with a keenness that belied her old age.
Hum,
she said, then added,
I was spec ops for 77 years in 18 different departments. I jumped backwards and forwards and even sideways on occasion. I've chased bad guys who made Hades look like St. Volk's and saved the world from annihilation 8 times. I've seen such weird shit that you can't even begin to comprehend, but for all of that, I have absolutely no idea how Mycroft managed to jump you into Jane Eyre.
Oh,
sorry, Thursday, but that's the way it is. If I were you, I'd work the problem out backwards. Who was the last person you met who could book jump?
Mrs. Nakajima.
And how did she manage it?
She just read herself in, I suppose.
Have you tried it?
I shook my head.
Perhaps you should, she replied with deadly seriousness. The first time you went into Jane Eyre, wasn't that a book jump?
I guess.
Perhaps,
she said as she picked a book at random off the shelf above her bed and tossed it across to me.
You had better try.
I picked the book up. The Tale of the Flopsy Bunnies?
Well, you've got to start somewhere, haven't you?
Replied Gran with a chuckle. I helped her take off her blue gingham shoes and made her more comfortable.
108,
she muttered.
I feel like the bunny in that fusion cell ad, you know, the one that has to run on Brand X.
Your fusion cell all the way to me, Gran. She gave a faint smile and leaned back on the pillows.
Read the book to me, my dear.
I sat down and opened the small Beatrix Potter volume. I glanced up at Gran, who had closed her eyes.
Read.
So I did, right from the front to the back.
Anything?
No, I replied sadly. Nothing.
Not even the whiff of garden refuse, or the distant buzz of a lawn mower?
Not a thing.
Ha, said Gran. Read it to me again.
So I read it again, and again after that.
Still nothing?
No, Gran, I replied, beginning to get bored.
How do you see the character of Mrs. Tittlemouse?
Resourceful and intelligent, I replied. Probably a gossip and likes to name drop. Leagues ahead of Benjamin in the brain department.
How do you figure that?
Queried Gran. Well, by allowing his children to sleep so vulnerably in the open air, Benjamin clearly shows minimal parenting skills, yet he has enough self-preservation to cover his own face. It was Flopsy who had to come and look for him, as this sort of thing has obviously happened before. It is clear that Benjamin can't be trusted with the children. Once again, the mother has to show restraint and wisdom.
Maybe so, replied Gran. But where's the wisdom in watching from the window while Mr. and Mrs. McGregor discovered that they'd been duped with the rotten vegetables?
She had a point.
A narrative necessity, I declared.
I think there is more high drama if you follow the outcome of the rabbit subterfuge, don't you? I think Flopsy, had she been making all the decisions, would have just returned to the burrow, but was, on this occasion, overruled by Beatrix Potter.
It's an interesting theory,
commented Gran, stretching her toes out on the counterpane and wriggling them to keep the circulation going.
Mr. McGregor's a nasty piece of work, isn't he?
Quite the Darth Vader of children's literature.
Misunderstood, I told her. I see Mrs. McGregor as the villain of the piece, a sort of Lady Macbeth. His laboured counting and inane chuckling might indicate a certain degree of dementia that allows him to be easily dominated by Mrs. McGregor's more aggressive personality. I think their marriage is in trouble, too. She describes him as a silly old man and a doddering old fool, and claims that rotten vegetables in the sack are just a pointless prank to annoy her.
Anything else?
Not really. I think that's about it.
Good stuff, isn't it?
But Gran didn't answer. She just chuckled softly to herself.
So you're still here, then? She asked. You didn't jump into Mr. and Mrs. McGregor's cottage?
No.
In that case, began Gran with a mischievous air, how did you know she called him a doddering old fool?
It's in the text.
Better check, young Thursday.
I flicked to the correct page and found, indeed, that Mrs. McGregor had said no such thing.
How odd,
I said. I must have made it up.
Maybe, replied Gran, or perhaps you overheard it. Close your eyes and describe the kitchen in Mr. McGregor's cottage.
Lilac-washed walls, I muttered. A large range with a kettle singing merrily above a coal fire. There is a dresser against one wall with floral-patterned crocks upon it, and atop the scrubbed kitchen table there is a jug with flowers. I lapsed into silence.
And how would you have known that? Asked Gran triumphantly, unless you had actually been there.
I quickly skimmed the book, surprised and impressed by the tantalizing glimmer of another world beyond the attractive watercolors and simple prose. I concentrated hard, but nothing similar happened. Perhaps I wanted it too much, I don't know. After the 10th reading, I was just looking at the words and ink and nothing else.
It's a start, said Gran encouragingly. Try another book when you get home, but don't expect too much too soon. And I'd strongly recommend you go and look for Mrs. Nakajima. Where does she live?
She took retirement in Jane Eyre.
Before that.
Osaka.
Then perhaps you should seek her there, and for heaven's sake, relax.
I told her I would, kissed her on the forehead and quietly left the room.